Computer, this is Data.
I'm an android. I'm
Rangers League basketball.
I was processing all of the information.
Processing.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Rangers League basketball.
Analytics was crap.
Does not compute.
Just because you got good stats doesn't mean you're a good team.
Hello and welcome back to the Lakers Exceptionalism Podcast. My name is Tom Z, joined as always by Tim, aka Krangis McBasketball. Today we are joined by a special guest. Sorry, didn't get very. We just had Austin Reeves on the pod. Would normally say very special guest, Harrison Fagan. How are you? Editor-in-chief of Silver Screen and Roll. So
yeah, I honestly, first of all, congrats on the guest. That was awesome, and I really enjoyed the pod. But I Very also lucky. Was gonna say Tim, do you hate me personally that you were like DM? Because it was before you had announced that Austin was coming on the pod. You're like, oh hey, can you come on the pod in like 2 weeks? And it's like, how do you make me the follow up for Austin Reeves? Like people are like, oh man, you know, Lakers Exceptionalism podcast, like they're big time now. They're probably gonna have like maybe not LeBron, but like I don't know, like Malik Monk or something next week to break down film. You know, like one of the lower tier guys. And instead it's like me. And so, yeah, I'm a little miffed at you for setting this up and like setting your audience up for disappointment with me.
Hey, if we're going to set someone up, it's going to be a top tier Lakers media person. So we're happy to have you. I'm sure this will be great. We'll ask you some different questions than we asked our last guest, but we're happy to have you.
How much work do the Lakers do in the film room? You know, as far as I know, probably a good amount. Like it seems like if they mention it all the time.
What are you doing on your off nights? Do you like Warzone and Netflix?
Yeah, you know, it's been Far Cry 6 lately. That's been my big one. But unlike Austin Reeves, I will hit you up for TV recommendations after the show.
Please do. Please do. I love it. I mean it. Anyone out there wants them, I got them. I will send them your way if you give me a little bit about what you're looking for. Anyway, we're going to talk Lakers, though. It's been a couple days of really weird basketball from the Lakers, honestly, culminating with a embarrassing loss in Oklahoma City after blowing a 26-point lead. So I guess we'll start there. I don't really want to spend too much time. I guess my quick take, I shared it on Twitter, is it's very bad. It's not ever good, right, to lose a, you know, game like that. But Tim, the rubber band snapped on him. This is kind of how some of this works in the NBA. And later, maybe if you could explain the rubber band effect to people who maybe don't know, you probably do it better than me. But second night of a back-to-back after an overtime game, Anthony Davis is hurt. I really, like, yes, they quit, I guess, but I didn't see a lot more they could have given on the court. And I really believe that. I don't know. Do either of you, like, disagree or think this is a simple sign of something more? Because maybe the rotations are really bad. I don't know. It just it doesn't upset me as much as I thought it would.
Yeah, I mean, you said the word embarrassing to describe the loss, which I think is the exact kind of right verbiage for or adjective for it. Yeah. Is like, you know, it's embarrassing. Obviously, you should never. I think ESPN had the stat of like the Lakers are like 400 something and 0 when leading by 25 points at any time during a regular season game. Like, teams don't just blow 26 point leads. That's not something that happens all the time. But they do blow like 18 point leads and stuff. Sure. And like realistically, you know, obviously this is historically bad, but it's also like, you know, every team has games somewhat akin to this throughout the long regular season. You know, Jacob, in a piece that he's writing for Silver Screen Roll right now, mentioned like the 17-point loss against Memphis at one point during the title year. It's just like teams have these losses to teams that they should not lose to. And regardless of the circumstances and how horrible it looked for basically the last three quarters or most of the last three quarters, it's just, you know, this kind of stuff happens. And I think that they did the thing that veteran teams sometimes do, where they decided like, we're scoring at will, we can kind of ease up off the gas a little bit on defense. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't put their foot back down in time. And, you know, I thought that the whole Frank Vogel, like, we're going to learn from this thing was kind of laughable, because it's like, no, you're not. These guys are all 30. They all should know better. And this kind of stuff just happens throughout the course of an NBA season. But it probably, you know, it's probably not going to happen against the Thunder again, but they will have losses that are unfortunate this year. And, you know, there's obviously stuff to take away from it, but I'm not like in complete panic mode, because I don't think it was as bad as it looked.
ultimately, I'm just glad it's only one loss in the standings. This is an early season game. Over a quarter of the minutes in this game were filled by guys who may not be getting any minutes at all when everyone's healthy, if everyone's healthy at some point this season, between DeAndre Jordan, Austin Reeves, who maybe now should get some more minutes, but he'll certainly be fighting for a spot, Rajon Rondo and Avery Bradley. So this isn't, you know, full strength Lakers, but still losing this way to this team after being up as much as they were is disappointing, and I think embarrassing is the right word. And Tom, to speak to the rubber band effect you were speaking of or you referenced, this is something that Nathan Walker on Twitter, he's at BB Stats, he has done a good job visualizing where when teams get a big lead, they tend to play less hard. And we just, in basketball, in the NBA, we tend to see large leads come back towards the middle, like a rubber band. You can stretch it out, but it's going to pull you back. And when you talk about the rubber band breaking, it almost like you stretch it and then you let go and it came back, snapped back at you, yeah, and then broke.
Exactly.
Where it went too far back in the opposite direction. So it's
and you
it's
couldn't
natural.
Catch up. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It's natural for teams up 25 or up 20 to be playing less hard and less focused than when it's a 2-point game. But it is not normal to see them completely blow the lead and then lose the way they did. So it stinks. Part of me is like, yeah, there's some to learn of, some to learn from with this game. Part of me is like, burn this tape and don't ever look at it. at least from our perspective, I just rewatched the whole thing and I feel down. It's kind of ruined my day. So I don't know. A lot went wrong. I agree that, you know, part of it's the second night of a back-to-back, although the Thunder were as well. They're probably the worst team in the league. We were debating pregame if they'd even win like 10 games this year. So this is a bad loss no matter how you chalk it up.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There are some positives to take from it. And at the end of the day, there are ways the rotation could probably get a little bit better even with the guys available. There are things the team's doing on offense that are smart, and then they'll kind of like stop doing them for like 4 or 5 minutes at a time. And it's like, you know, just run the good plays more often and you'll succeed more. On defense, like, they're doing, I think, what we'd want them to see, at least schematically. Like, they're playing drop coverage with the bigs. When AD's out there at the five, they switched 10 of the 12 ball screens he was involved in. Like, they're doing some of those little things that you'd want to see. It's just there are a lot of breakdowns on ball and off ball. And when you don't have two rim protectors in there, it's really, really tough for this Lakers team to not be poor defensively, given who they're throwing out on the perimeter defensive side of things. So it stinks. Thankfully, it's early season and there's plenty that can improve within these guys, within the approach, and just with the roster getting healthier. So I'm not too down about it, but last night was not a fun night on Twitter.
I just wanted to say really quickly to add to that, like, the, you know, teams having let down games like this and even good teams losing to really bad teams sometimes, you know, I believe it was the Marcelo Huertas, you know, D'Angelo Russell Lakers beat the 73 win Warriors at one point during the season, you know, like this kind of stuff happened. I'm not saying the Lakers are going to go on and they're going to win 73 games. They're, you know, they're pretty down in their odds to do that, I would say, at this point. But, you know, like, even really, really historically good teams lose to embarrassing lottery teams sometimes. It just happens. It doesn't always happen like this. Like, the Lakers came out hot. I remember that game with, you know, they were up the whole time. But stuff like this happens. And it just, like, you can't get too worked up over it, especially when, like Tim mentioned, you know, you have the, like, the bad perimeter defenders. Like, when the Lakers are healthy, you know, they're never going to play a Melo, Rondo, Russ lineup ever. Probably. Or if they do, Frank Vogel's probably going to lose his job the next day. Like, injuries have kind of forced their hand with, to some degree, with some of these unideal lineups. And you're going to have breakdowns when you just play those three guys, or you play, like, you know, some of the combinations of guys with Monk out there, whoever that they're playing. Like, they're just playing a lot of not great defenders right now. And that's going to lead to comebacks like this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and honestly, I wanted to say really quick that OKC is not as bad as I thought they were. I think Shea was awesome last night. I thought Giddy was awesome last night. And they might have something there, Tim. You were kind of advocating for them on Twitter a little bit. And I'm not really trying to, like, say, look over here. This wasn't an embarrassing loss. OKC might be good.
Secret really juggernaut.
No. But I was impressed by those two guys especially. And when you mix in some kind of, you know, role players around it, you know, they're going to have 1,000 picks. We'll see what that actually means to them. But Shea is good, man. Giddy's good. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, they've got really three things going for them. Shea is excellent, and he is maturing. He's adding to his game. He gets to the rim really well. He's hitting those like step back threes, and like he's doing everything offensively. And really encouraged by his play. He's like a legit player right now. Giddy, only 19 years old. I think he was the number 6 pick in the draft this year out of Australia. Super, you know, just really talented young guy. And the fact that he's as tall as he is and handles the ball like he does gives him a lot of inherent mismatches. And over time, he'll bulk up a bit and be able to take advantage of that more. But we saw even with the Lakers yesterday, it was giving them trouble as a team that didn't have a lot of wing depth, didn't have much big man depth, just trying to stay with him or be able to contest his shots. And then that arena has Dippin' Dots everywhere. I was there less than a week ago.
Excuse me?
Their arena is fantastic, Tom. Dippin' Dots left and right, every floor, seemingly like every three sections. I'd only have good things to say about their arena. And right outside of it, they have a really nice area as well.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's really, I think, going to be the key when they rebuild the team and they're like kind of back to like the Russ, Durant, like Harden heyday. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be Giddy, Shea, and Dippin' Dots. You know, that's like, that's the new big three.
Yeah, come for the Dippin' Dots, stay for Shea and Giddy. That's okay. All right, Tim, respect. You know, I'm glad you're, you know, enjoying the OKC arena at some of these games. I'm sure they're going to be, you know, not expensive to go to. But I actually wanted to ask, just kind of, Tim and I were talking a little before the show, Harrison, about this also being a factor of the team construction. It's not only that they're missing a lot of guys, which is sure, they're very not helpful. This is basketball. This is common. Lakers have seemed to be bitten by an injury bug as of the last calendar year. But did you expect this, you know, lack of wing depth to show itself this early in the season? Or, you know, why haven't they just re-signed Wes Matthews? Anything you've heard on that end? What's your take on kind of the lack of the wing depth on this team? It's really surprising.
Yeah, the Wes Matthews thing is confusing because it's not just that, like, the Lakers didn't re-sign. Because, you know, he had an okay year last year, okay to bad. Like, at times, he kind of came on a little bit down the stretch. But, you know, that certainly was not a game that was going to get him paid by any means. But for him to be completely out of the league, like, I just wonder if there's something else going on. I have not heard anything to this respect or whatever. But I just wonder, like, the fact that we haven't even heard any rumors of teams like working him out or being interested, you know, it just kind of makes me think that maybe he just is thinking about that he might be done. Like, he just maybe doesn't want to play or, you know, there's something else going on. Like, it's confusing because for that reason, just, it's not just about the Lakers. It's that we've heard nothing about him at all. Good retirement, you know, other teams interested, going in for a workout. Oh, here's a couple names to keep an eye on for this team's like in the buyout market or whatever. Like, it's just like nothing on him. A complete radio silence. And I did not expect the wing issues to kind of show themselves this early, although in retrospect, maybe we should have.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there was one of the things I've been thinking about in regards to this roster a lot over the last couple of weeks and during the kind of disappointing preseason was, you know, there's some holes, especially on the wing. And one of the things is like, you know, every single signing that the Lakers made, like, they didn't make a bad signing this offseason. All of them look great kind of in, you know, like in a vacuum. But in terms of as a cohesive team, like, there's a pretty big hole here at the wing. And, you know, like, you know, our friend Darius Soriano was writing at for Silver Screen Roll last week about the Lakers kind of wing issues and how they could use like another bulkier forward, like a Markieff Morris type that could kind of play some of those like small ball four, small ball 5 minutes in a pinch, has some toughness, has some like kind of bulk to them for these times, especially on nights when LeBron's sitting. You need a guy like that, I think, that they don't have. And I was joking with him, like, for the headline, like, should we call this, maybe the team shouldn't have built their, maybe the Lakers shouldn't have built around 36-year-old Trevor Ariza? Like, should that be the headline of this story? Because, like, he should not be this important to the team. Yeah. This is a guy, I don't think he's finished a season healthy in 3 years. Like, has he played a complete season or anything close to it? And they should not have. I remember when they signed him, I was like, this is a great guy for like bench depth insurance type thing. And it seems like they were thinking of him as maybe a starter, like a guy who was going to play a significant role in the rotation, which I know that like you guys were a little higher on his signing and actually like kind of brought me around on some of the things that he had done last year. And, you know, he was a little better than I had realized. But, you know, just they should not, I think all of us can agree, they should not have been relying on him this much to kind of play for it to look this bad at times defense. Like, Like, he's not going to come back and just fix the defense. That's not something that's going to happen.
No.
He would help.
It would help, but it's not going to, like, it's not going to solve, like, these kinds of issues.
But the problem is that we put so much value on just him. And the point is, this should have been somewhat expected, baked into who you're getting and why you're getting him at that price, right?
And, like, he should have, like, this should be a guy that's, like, somewhat expendable. Like, you should not need Trevor Ariza. You know, he should be a nice thing to have, a nice player to have in your rotation. But it should not be someone that you're relying on to where it's like, oh, yeah, I mean, the Lakers are 2-5, but they don't have Trevor Ariza. You know, like, that's not something any of us would have expected to say.
Yeah.
I think if THT were playing,
that's a big part of it too.
I think it's the fact that both of them are out that really makes this as much of an issue as it is, because we're playing lineups that have 80 and then 80 at the five, and then either Braun at the four and like Bazemore at the three, and you're small, or you have Melo at the four, who's not good rotating, and LeBron at the three, and you've got issues there too. If you could have those Braun THT 3-4-4-3 groupings, or if Ariza were in, Ariza at the four, Braun at the three, you've got two guys there that, like, Ariza's not an elite rim protector. He's not the best on-ball defender, but he's really good at rotating. So just having him and Braun able to put out little fires is beneficial, or it at least lets Braun and his, what he does and what he's good at is much more impactful as the small forward in a lineup compared to being a power forward. And having two of those guys on the court at the same time, or one of them plus two rim protectors, like, those lineups should fare better. So just the fact that we can't have THT and Ariza, I think, makes it really makes things tough. So I agree that we are in a position right now where it's like, if Ariza comes back and he just doesn't have it, this team's in trouble. Like, they need THT to be that guy, or they need Austin Reeves to be someone they can rely on for big minutes. Cause right now with the roster construction, there's just no other depth at the wing position if you do want to play AD at center at all.
And, like, Austin Reeves has been great, you know, like, you know, I'm not going to disparage your, you know, friend of the program, Austin Reeves, but, like, the Lakers, there's no way that they were counting on him going into the year, you know, like, they were counting on THT and Ariza to be kind of this, like, backup wing void. And I just think in retrospect, again, I know, like, free agency wings are valued. It's kind of the toughest type of player to get. So it's really easy for me to say, just get a wing, like, but, and harder for them to do it, but they probably should have, you know, used either Bradley or, you know, or DJ or Rondo's roster spot on someone like that would have probably made a lot more sense, you know, in hindsight, because now it's like Rondo has to play just because there's like no other bodies left, but you're out there, you have him and Russ who just don't work together on either end. You know, it's just kind of, they really needed one more wing guy this summer, I think. And for them to, and there, it's something they're going to have to fix in the buyout market, or this team, I think, is going to be in trouble, because whether, like, at this point, it's hard to expect that Ariza is going to come back and be, you know, great or totally reliable the whole season, just given his age and whatever. Like, he might come back and stay healthy the whole time and help, but it's probably not going to, like, they're going to need one more guy, I think, at this point, you know, if you're planning for the most likely scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think, I don't know. I kind of want to talk about Vogel a little bit right now, because I don't think this is just, oh, LeBron was hurt, second night of a back-to-back, you know, what I kind of set up before. And I believe that. I do still believe that Vogel is not setting the team up for success in some of these lineups. I think he's really bad at keeping with lineups that clearly are working over other lineups on a night-to-night basis. So recognizing and going with guys longer than he normally would, and really going back to that, and, like, we'll see it in the, you know, end of the third quarter to stem the tide because they've lost like 20 points and they'll put in a good lineup really quick. It's like, why are we doing this after we're down 20 points? This is a theme with this team in third quarters going back 3 years. And he's not learning the right, like, he's making the same mistakes, I guess. And that, to me, I guess, Harrison, for you, seeing that he only got that 1 year extension, which I think speaks to what the team values in him as far as his expendability. I'm not advocating for anyone losing their job. I don't believe in that. However, as a fan, I think he is making some really, really obvious mistakes over and over again. And it's so frustrating to see, but I don't know. What have you heard on that end?
Yeah, I mean, I think with Vogel, the what you said about the extension is absolutely correct. Like, that was not a vote of confidence, you know, in right. Vogel. That was a, we don't want you to be a lame duck coach all year, so we are going to give you this token one-year extension. But we don't necessarily know that you're going to coach the way that we want you to coach this year and that this team is going to look the way that we want it to look, because I think that to some degree, he's like coaching a team that he doesn't have. Like, he's just like, mm-hmm. DeAndre Jordan, you're JaVale McGee now. And in 2021, and like 2021 JaVale McGee is like better than 2021 DeAndre Jordan, much less like 2019-20 JaVale McGee, mm-hmm. or 22. I for time is 2021-22 now is where we are. Yes, I'm like losing, you know, time is a flat circle in like a 2-year pandemic, guys. But, you know, I think that that was a certain lack of faith, and that kind of showed you that they didn't necessarily think that this year was going to go great with him kind of coaching this kind of new identity that they want to clear. They these multiple ball handlers. They want to lighten the load on LeBron. They want to extend his career. And that's pretty obvious from the signings that they're making and how many playmakers and scorers they're trying to add. Like, I think that, you know, it's just, it, I'm not sure that Vogel is the coach for kind of the identity that they clearly want to shift towards. Like most coaches, I think, you know, most coaches, even the good ones, are good when they have their type of roster. Like, they got to where they got because they have a kind of like a single-minded vision of how basketball should be played, what works, what doesn't, what they like, what they don't like. And he is coaching this team to be this like frantically rotating, you know, multiple efforts, defense, and, you know, big kind of impose their will on you, physicality, bigger, stronger, faster. And the Lakers are not bigger, stronger, or faster right now. They're kind of, you know, they have a ton of skill on their roster. They have a ton of shooting and things like that, but they're trying to kind of redo this identity of the team that won the title, which is great if you had a roster more similar to that team, but they don't right now. And I think that that is kind of where, like, I don't think Vogel's a bad coach or anything like that. He has his flaws like any other coach, but I don't think that he is helping himself by doubling down on what he likes to do versus trying to adapt to what this roster really is.
And I think injuries are a big piece of that. And the Lakers are in a position where if this roster is fully healthy, I think they can succeed to that vision that you're speaking about. Yeah. So where they are today, they have to decide, all right, are we going to put a Band-Aid on this and just try to, you know, make this work with the same game plan, same strategy, even though it's not the best? Or do we make a real change and, you know, install new behaviors, put some new principles in and do something that might benefit us now, but won't match what we're hoping we can be once we get some of these guys back? So it's, in some ways, it's a little bit of a tough situation. And I think once THT is back, once Ariza is back, like, if this roster is healthy, I think for the period of time that roster is healthy, this can be a top 10 defense. Right now, they're not close to that because they just have too many guys out there that just can't defend well. But I have hope. And I think Kendrick Nunn's another good defender. Like, you know, he's not some lockdown guy, but he's like a quietly good defender. They're taking away three negatives with Rondo, DeAndre Jordan, and then, I mean, Avery Bradley's been good on defense. So I guess you're not quite getting the plus there by taking him out. But if you put THT in, if you put Ariza in, if you put Nunn in, I think you're upgrading there, big picture. So I don't know. I'm trying to pump the brakes on getting too upset with where the defense can be. I like the general roster construction idea of, instead of grabbing defensive guys that you really need to optimize offensively for a staff that's good at optimizing defense but not offense, we've instead given this team shooting and some guys who can self-create, and they've got three stars, and improve the defense. If you know, if you're a defensive staff, get the most out of this defense. And then even if you're not running the most exciting offensive stuff, the idea would be that, you know, there's enough there already as the baseline that even if you don't make it prettier than it could be just as is, you should be able to succeed. So that's at least where I was thinking going into the offseason, and I think this can work. I just don't know that the injuries have allowed it, and I don't know. I at the end of the day, like, I think we've seen, and like, I have clips of video and I've looked at chunks of time where, like, this team's kicking butt offensively. There are like about a dozen actions or plays this team runs that like are really good, and they just will go games where they don't use eight of them, or they don't use six of them, or the three that they do use, they only use like for a 4 or 5 minute stretch. And it's like, you have the right answers. The play calling needs to be much better, because what we have, even with the roster as is, at least offensively, can be much, much better. So I'm all over the place. It's super early and the injuries stink, but there definitely are ways this can get much better. I don't think any of us are in agreement that firing Vogel would be the right move right now. Like, you've got to live with this and they have to make this work. But they, to Tom's earlier point, they have to be able to look at the mirror at halftime. You can't be getting killed by, you know, a dozen. You can't lose every third quarter by a dozen points and win a lot of games. They have to be better at those in-game adjustments and then game-to-game seeing what works. We can't have old Frank Vogel where he says, I need, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks of lineup data to be able to make a decision. You have to be able to make decisions quicker. That's we can all tell you if something's not working after a month. You get paid the big bucks because you can make those decisions on the fly in game or without getting a huge sample of data. So
that's where the eye test comes in. That's not the challenge. That's where like you're watching it and you're deciding like, okay, I mean, you know, this lineup's having success, but I didn't kind of like some of these things that I'm seeing from it. So we're still going to go away from it. Or this lineup looks really bad, but they're just missing shots and stuff like that. That's where the eye test comes in versus the data. And obviously they're all important, but to your point, I mean, that is why he's making millions of dollars and why we're sitting here podcasting.
Oh, of course.
Mm-hmm. And they have, I mean, they have the shot quality data. They have everything that they could want, everything we could ever want. They've got, like, they, from a process standpoint, should be able to make better decisions with smaller samples using the data. And then, of course, like you're saying, using that eye test. They just have to just be quicker to react. So here's to hoping to that. It's only been 5 games. Injuries have changed like seemingly every single game. So we haven't had a stretch where it's like, all right, this is the same, you know, hand of cards that you have. Or how are you going to play?
I certainly don't think that he's like fixing everything. And it's like, oh man, like Vogel really underappreciated coaching job here. But yeah, I mean, he certainly has not been dealt an ideal hand at this point. And yeah, it's too early to just be on the like fire Vogel train or this is not all his fault. I just don't think that he's necessarily helped himself a ton.
Yeah, and it's a bad look when you go out and run some of the like late game after timeout set plays the Lakers did this past game. Whether or not it was the intent or not, like Russell Westbrook taking a pull-up three when you need a three. And
yeah, I'm convinced that the Monk one was not the play. Like those guys, like if you watch the replay, like they were all like AD was yelling at him like that. I'm convinced now that that was not the play that they were supposed to run, and nobody was going to throw him under the bus. But like, I don't think that he was supposed to shoot that.
That's encouraging,
I guess. But like, if the play was to give it back to Russ and have him launch another one, I mean, that's not that. I mean, we don't know. It's like, that's like an incomplete. Mm-hmm. And the Melo thing, like I saw a lot of people getting mad at him, but like, I'm not mad at Melo. He had an open shot in the closing seconds of the game to tie it up. He took it. I mean, there was not much else you're going to do there. Like, it was the Russ one that I was like, this is kind of a red flag if that's what they were supposed to do. Like this, it would be one thing if you're kind of giving it to LeBron for that play. Like LeBron is a decent pull-up three-point shooter. He's a decent three-point shooter. But like, if that was the play and you're running it for Russ, like that's not ideal. But I guess maybe you just say in the regular season, we're giving him this one now so that, you know, later on he doesn't feel like he needs to try it. I don't know. I feel like there's a certain aspect.
I'll take the W now, Harrison. Give me the W.
In the closing seconds of the game, you would think so. But especially in a game the Thunder were like really trying to lose after kind of a spirited second and third quarter and most of the fourth quarter and all of that, but they were really, really trying to give that one away through it, probably not intentionally, but through inexperience and all that. The Lakers really should have come out with a win last night.
Yeah. I don't want to encourage these guys. We've seen Anthony Davis and how his style of play has changed since having that great three-point shooting and mid-range pull-up shooting season in 2019-2020. Since then, he has not been good in either of those areas, but continues to act and play like he is. And so, you know, I don't want to encourage Russ any
that's
more than
we need
to.
That's the thing that's always fascinated me about his shot selection is it's like, are you making these in practice? Like, do you think that this is like a 12-year cold stretch that you're on? It's just like, it's gonna bounce back to the meat. Like, I don't know. I'm serious. I'm not trying to make fun of him. Like, I think like, it's just weird. Like, I don't understand someone who like clearly seems like a smart guy, like clearly wants to win basketball games. I don't get it.
I think it's an irrational confidence with any of these star players. There's always irrational confidence because you just have to believe, even though you're having a bad night, you can turn it around at any point.
Yeah, yeah, I guess, but you know, it's a couple years of data on those Russ pull up threes, I think, and yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, and like you want him to be confident, but you want him to have a you know a sense of reality and understanding that like this isn't the best shot for us. Like if I have to hit this, you know, I'll hit this with when there's 3 seconds left on the shot clock. If there's 16 left on the shot clock, let's go get a better shot. Knowing who we are and I don't know, just the people around him, I don't enabling may might be the right word. Just like get a good sense as a team and on a player by player basis as to when is the red light, when is the green light. Like with Mel, we heard him reference that green light, red light mentality with isolations. I'm good with that. Like he shouldn't be isolating all the time or against everybody, but when he's got a great matchup, go for it. You need to have that same internal calculus as Russell Westbrook to know with this much time on the shot clock or given how the floor is looking, this is an okay shot. But if there's plenty of time and we've got a space floor or whatever, you know, let me go be me and go attack the rim, that sort of thing. So that's what I'm hoping for and hoping we'll see improve throughout the year. What Melo's done is encouraging. We just have to see AD and Russ buy in.
And also, like, we've seen with Russ, like, we saw basically, you know, the effects of the back-to-back on his shot selection last night. You know, like, he had the night against the Spurs. He was going to the rim. It's not like the Thunder have, like, insane rim protection or something like that. I think he was just tired. That was tired legs. Mm-hmm. He settled a little bit more. And that kind of stuff is going to happen over the course of an 82-game season. If that was a playoff game, I don't know that he's settling for the same shots as he is in, you know, like, a random, you know, October night in Oklahoma City on the second night of a back-to-back.
So, look.
Yeah, 25% of his shots were at the rim last night, and that was the lowest of any game so far this season. He's been in the 40s or 50% most games.
No, I was going to say, let's talk about that Spurs game a little bit because we haven't potted since then. I thought it looked good early. It was ugly through the middle quarters, and obviously closing was ugly, and that team should have been able to put that win away. But I did think it was the other side of the coin on this back-to-back. They showed grit. They got lucky with some missed free throws in the fourth. But I do think that they showed determination and kind of a passion and a cohesion that this is the time to lock things in. I was still a little frustrated with the lack of bigs minutes as Jakob Poeltl was just, you know, getting free, and you know Anthony Davis wasn't able to recover and just stop a screen and stop Poeltl. It was like, man, I thought DeAndre and Dwight were actually pretty good that night, but you know, again,
Dwight especially. Dwight had like his best stretch of the season in that game in that fourth quarter.
So yeah, I guess what did y'all think of that game? I actually was pretty encouraged by that game. Maybe that's why I wasn't as upset by the Thunder game, but I definitely thought the Spurs game was something that, you know, we saw old Russell Westbrook, you know, for better or worse, only 3 turnovers, and he was getting to the rim. He was settling sometimes, but mostly being aggressive and setting other guys up.
His percentage of the shots at the rim, that game was the highest of any game so far this season. I think it was like 58% or something like
surprising.
That. I'll try to pull it up. Yeah, and that's good. And I, you know, we love to see that. Why I'm a little bit less encouraged is after going back and looking at the film, there were a lot of plays the Spurs were just going over on ball screens against him, which is not the thing to do and is not what any of the other teams were doing on a consistent basis. So the Spurs were running like the wrong defensive coverage against him, and that just let him, you know, get attacking downhill. And to his credit and to the Lakers' credit, they took advantage of that. It's just not it, to me, it was less that like, oh, the Lakers have figured something out or they've solved something in that regard, and more so like this team just, you know, gave us an easy one and they took advantage of it as they should, but it's less long-term, you know, rosy for me from that perspective.
Is Pop trying to troll the Lakers by playing intentionally bad defense against them to make them overconfident and make Westbrook overconfident? Like this is how deep his Lakers hate goes, is, you know, he's tanking regular season games against them just to kind of give them like an unearned sense of confidence.
I wish.
Maybe. You never know.
I wish. Wouldn't hold anything past it. You know, Kawhi could be a Laker if not for that. But, you know, who cares? We got Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And now Russell Westbrook, who has been either great or terrible this season with very little in between. That is kind of as he goes as a player. Tim, he's actually setting ball screens. You know, he's actually from zero in the first game. He started to set some more inverted ball screens with LeBron. As we're kind of going back through the games here, we saw some good stuff in that Grizzlies game, I thought, offensively, or at least better, you know, than the first couple games against the Warriors and the Suns. So where are you at right now? What's your temperature on, like, what offense or lack thereof this team is running? And we kind of heard from Austin Reeves, like, it's not so much play calling that maybe you would like. You know, it's a lot of hero ball, for lack of a better word, playing off of the circumstances.
Yeah, it's your basketball is jazz analogy, but for like a high school band. Like there are times where it just does not sound good. And you know, you got a couple guys who like can, you know, really hit the notes and they've got something promising going on, but like sometimes it's ugly. And so in Russell Westbrook's 39 minutes in that game against the Spurs, he only set like 7 or 8 of those inverted ball screens, and they worked out really well. That is one example of, I think there were 5 or 6 different concepts I've seen the Lakers use so far to combat the fact that teams are going underneath his ball screens, which has just historically been the way to shut him down. If you go under his ball screen, you play drop coverage, he can't get to the rim. And the Lakers have found ways to attack that instead of setting these side-to-side traditional east-west, I'd call them ball screens. They're trying to go north-south. They're when the screener's setting the screen, he's setting the screen behind the defender instead of on his side. And you can't go under that. You have to pick a side. And if you pick the wrong side, Russ is going to the rim. If you're the big man, you have to drop, because if you're not dropping, if you're trying to show hard or hedge in any way or trap on one side of that screen, Russ can go the other way and he's going to go dunk at the rim. So it is a way to get him attacking downhill. At times, if he's facing a good rim protector, he's going downhill. They're in position, hands up, and he doesn't have anything. But when he's able to get to the rim and finish with force, that has been one of the several ways they've done so. So some of those concepts I've really liked. The inverted ball screens I've really enjoyed. Again, it's just kind of a frequency thing where it's like they're running the right plays, but just like we've talked about with guys playing with LeBron and cutting out the fat in their game, the Lakers need to cut out some of the fat in their offensive possessions. Because if they just flip some of these frequencies, and I don't think Bron or Russ or anybody's going to be super upset if they run like 4 or 5 more set plays a game, it might get them an extra couple points a game. You know, I'm on more one end of the spectrum where I want more structure, and it doesn't have to be call out a set play every play, but have some sort of concept going on. Go inverted ball screen because you're just generating advantages, or have a LeBron AD ball screen, or just some of those things that like, it's basketball. It doesn't need to be a set play where we diagram something up, but it's organized in some way, shape, or form in a way where you know where everyone's going to be, the reads are simple, and you're just, you know, being, you know, purposeful about what you're doing. So I am encouraged by what we've seen in that they're showing the right things. They're just not showing enough of it. And so far, defenses haven't shut it down all that well. So if they start showing more, if we see a play calling switch for a game or 5 games or 10 games, suddenly this offense is going to be popping off. So it's there. They just need to reach more into the bag and pull out some of the tricks more often.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting, Harrison, that also, sorry, just a little quick tidbit before you about the Russell Westbrook ball screens, that Zach Lowe on his podcast talking about seven, which you said was kind of around the range he was doing in that game, is like his career high ball screen set, that he doesn't do that like is in his game. So he's adding stuff to fit around the Lakers offense with LeBron. And I think that's a positive sign. I think there were good things to take away in these last like three or four games.
No, that's the thing that I've been most encouraged about, frankly, is the fact, I mean, and less so the last two games, because it's like, that's obviously going to be a more important development when he's actually playing with LeBron. But it was that right. game previous against Memphis, when they were just going Russ ball screen, like down the stretch. Mm-hmm. And that obviously, like, it didn't really work a lot. Like, there were a lot of bad results on those possessions, but I like the process and I like that he was actively doing it. And I think that if they continue to work on that throughout the course of the year, that's something that could really pay dividends for them. Like you mentioned the Zach Lowe screen numbers. I remember when he wrote on the Russ trade edition, that was one of the things that like popped out at me, was like, oh my God, like I did not realize that he set like this little screen. Like I knew it wasn't a major part of his game, but I didn't know. I think they said last season he set like 17 total or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was like some really, really tiny number of screens that he actually set throughout. And so I was like, I knew he'd set more this year, but the fact that he's so kind of willing embraced it like this quickly is what is kind of most encouraging to me, more so than anything out of this start, if you're looking for bright side takeaways, because you know it's important that Russ gets comfortable, it's important that LeBron plays well, that AD plays well, but if this team is going to maximize its ceiling, you know, Russ and LeBron have to be able to play together for like probably like 25 plus 30 plus minutes during a playoff game. You can only stagger them so much at that point. It, you know, and in that case, they need to be able to fit together. And I think that the Russ kind of like setting those small pick and roll, those small big pick and rolls with LeBron can be something that is a real weapon for this team if they can kind of get on the same page and continue to adjust and get used to that.
It was Jacob, right? Jacob Rude, who put together an article about those inverted ball screens over at Silver Screen Rule. Okay. Go check that out if you haven't already. He did a good job identifying and showing what was going on there. Why that's such a useful, successful concept is when you're guarding a ball screen and there's a guard setting the screen, usually you have two options to defend it. Either you can switch or you can... You're not going to run like drop coverage with a guard and expect that guard to defend the rim. So you don't do that. You're going to run some sort of aggressive coverage, a show and recover where you step out, you know, just try to delay them for a second and then get back. We see this a lot in college and just normal ball screen situations. But at the NBA level, guards usually either switch or they show and recover, or maybe you'll trap, not as often with the trap. And the Lakers, if you're defending LeBron and Russ, if you do that show and recover and you've got two guys on the ball temporarily, that opens up what we'd call that short roll, where it's just an immediate pocket pass. Russ catches. LeBron and his two defenders are behind Russ, and Russ is now attacking downhill. He's catching at like the free throw line. And with how the Lakers were running these plays, they were running the ball screen towards another perimeter player, so they were also kind of out of the way. So once Russ caught the ball, it wasn't even a 4-on-3. It was a 3-on-2. It was, I'm going to the rim. I've got two corner shooters. If you come to help me, I'm kicking it out. Or if one of those guys was like AD, he would come to the rim. So if you come at me, I'll just throw the lob up or dump it off to him. So 3v2 with Russ running the game, like that's going to score all the time. That should be automatic as long as the pass gets in well and they're organized the right way. Switching is the other option. And like I was going back and forth with some people on Twitter as to which of the two is a better option. I think I'd rather switch, even though it's still a bad situation, because at least then, even if you have a point guard on LeBron, you can still send some extra help.
Yeah, it's like less chaos. It's less chaos. You can make some more adjustments. You can have like guys adapt and get, you know, try to get back in position. Like you can have guys fight. Yeah. Like you have a chance there. Like I don't think that you really
can try something.
Yeah, you don't really have even a second to decide what you want to do when it's Russ in a 3-on-2 from the free throw line. Like there's no, you're making like a split second decision and he just gets to react, which is where he's at his best. Whereas like LeBron, you know, he still is going to try and set up kind of his best option. Like you have a little bit more time to kind of decide on the, like I would switch. I don't think it's a good idea, but like it's the best of all of those options, I think, that you laid out.
Exactly. And if it were Alex Caruso, KCP, Wayne Ellington, any of those guys setting the screen, you're not worried about them.
How dare you?
And that's why we saw in the past teams, they'll show and recover. They're not switching. They're going to show and recover. Because if KCP catches in the short roll, bad things are going to happen. This is the same as when the Lakers played Portland in that first round series a couple years ago. They were getting two guys on Dame and ball screens temporarily. And Nurkic was just, you know, flustering in the short roll. And he was having trouble. He's better at that now. But it's that same idea. When you have Russ in there, or if Bron is setting the screen and he gets the ball in the short roll, they're going to kick ass. Like, that should win just about every time. The success rate should be really high. And to your point, Harrison, you don't have options. Like, you're handcuffed at that point. It's like, we have, you know,
you just have no time. React. Like, they're about to do something, and you have to figure it out and try and adapt and, you know, make a play. But unless you have a really, really good, like, one of the best defenders in the league as your big man, like, back there, like, you know, it's just going to be tough to have success for any extended stretch of time against that play. Like, someone will make a play sometimes, you know, get a hand on the pass, or there'll be a bad, like, a mistimed lob pass. They'll have a second to get back to AD. We saw that during the Spurs game. Like, there will be mistakes. The Lakers aren't going to be flawless in those situations. But over a large sample size, like, that's going to be a really good set for them.
Yep. And like, Ja Morant guarding LeBron is not a good situation for the defense. Like, this is picking between two bad options. Just at least it's 25 feet from the rim to start with. You have Russ and his defender in, or his new defender in the middle of the paint. So there is no immediate drive available. And you have bodies able to rotate, able to, you know, sink into the paint and do stuff to, you know, you can make decisions on defense. You can be proactive. And there are different routes you can take between stunting and doubling and pre-rotating to the rim. All different things that may ultimately still end up with two on the ball. You just kind of get to dictate that a little bit more. And you're probably killing 5 or 6 seconds off the shot.
And regular season LeBron may just shoot the three over him anyway. Like, that's going to happen. Exactly. He would never do that if he got Ja on a switch in the playoffs. He would take him down into the post every single time. But during the regular season, like, LeBron may take a couple of those pull-ups, and that's fine. Like, but he's, you know, he's 36 years old. That's all right. Like, he's allowed to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, about the same percentage of the time that the Lakers are going to screw up a lob or something in the short roll, we're probably going to see Bron just settle for a jumper in that ISO.
I mean, he will bail the defense out at least once or twice, like, if they are trying that guard switch before he, like, if he misses a couple threes, then all of a sudden he's going to be taking him downhill, but if he hits a couple, then, you know, it works out.
Yeah, so to tie a bow around this is a really smart concept. It's going to work now. It's going to work in the playoffs. You can't just sag off of Russ when he's setting these screens, or Bron is just going to attack downhill. So I love this for the Lakers. They just need to use it a little bit more. There's no point in trying to, like, hide it or hold on to it, because once you get to the playoffs, teams will be prepared for it, and they're going to show you stuff that you need to be able to counter. And if you haven't gone through that process in the regular season, you're learning on the fly in the playoffs. I'd rather, you know, work through all your homework exercises before the final exam, and then, you know that you've solved this problem before. So that's kind of the growth I want to see from this team, but this is another really smart.
And I just wanted to mention two things on that real quick, is that, like, number one, we've barely mentioned this, but, like, AD is also the other guy in that equation in most of these closing lineups. And so you have, like, an elite, like, kind of a lob threat athletic guy to, like, either get a second chance point off of, like, if Russ takes a kind of a short floater or something like that. Like, you have one of the best players in the league equipped for that specific skill set that you want from a big in that situation on offense. And then, like, number two is that, you know, I just wonder how much of not using it a ton during the regular season is sort of like, remember when the Warriors had KD and Curry, had KD and they had Steph, and, you know, their fans were screaming all year, run more, like, Steph, KD, pick and rolls and stuff like that. But Steve Kerr very clearly, like, wanted to save that as a thing for the playoffs. They're like, we know that this works. We don't really need to see anything on it. I just wonder how much of that is, like, how much of this is that a little bit of, like, we don't, you can say that, but they may feel like, you know, well, we have counters that we don't want to show, or that we don't want to give teams a bunch of data on. Like, they might say the exact counterpoint to what you said, you know, we don't want to allow teams to do their homework, you know, give them more film to kind of do that homework. We don't want to let them take notes into the test or something like that. And, you know, that may just be a philosophical thing where they're like, we just don't want to overshow this.
In that scenario, and I think the Warriors are a little bit different, because they're like, we've got Starkiller, you know, we have the Death Star. We don't need to show you Starkiller base yet. Like, that, the Lakers are in a little bit of a different situation in terms of how the offense is performing. But I think that's a fair point. And really what it would come down to is, if nobody's showing anything early, once you get to the playoffs, you just need to be able to adjust on the fly. And if you are seeing new things, you need to have tactical strength and confidence and prowess in your staff to make the right decisions and be able to communicate that to players, and players execute something that they haven't executed before. And so I don't feel great about the Lakers in that situation. I would prefer they just have all the answers ahead of time and be prepared and then just adjust based on things that they've done already. Because I think at the end of the day, there's no real solving that concept. I think if it's something that, like, it's like a trick play that, like, once a team sees it, it's, you know, you can shut it down. This isn't quite that. So I think this can be a real staple of the offense that I think I would love to see them get more reps with. Because I think this, if they're going to be dominant or go anywhere in the playoffs, they're going to have to do this well and often.
They've got three games with Russ and LeBron. So, like, I think at some point we'll probably see more of this regardless. Yeah,
for sure. For sure.
We went from seeing them not do it at all in the first game of the season to starting to do it regularly. So there's positive movement there in that direction. So
Russ is going to be Karl Malone by like game 53, just like all screens for LeBron all the time.
You mean Bruce Brown?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I would like to say Russell Westbrook is tied for third in Kobe assists right now per...
He brought Mamba stats. Mentality back to
so
the Lakers.
There is definitely something that I guess I'll throw this in. The Lakers are exponentially more vertical threat this year. Part of it is healthy Anthony Davis. Part of it is Russell Westbrook throwing lobs. Rondo's back throwing lobs. They're not always great lobs. Most of the time, they're pretty good, though, I think. Russ can get the ball to AD at angles, I think. You know, AD is an athletic catcher. He's got a couple turnovers throwing some stuff to Dwight Howard, and Dwight was like, no way he's going to bend backwards and catch that ball land. And you see Russell Westbrook get frustrated by that and shake his head up the court. I remember this possession vividly. But Anthony Davis is catching this, spinning, putting a guy on his back, dunking. There's positives with Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook, too, that I've seen over the last couple games. And, I mean, it's not good that LeBron's missing time, but I guess that's something else positive to take away, that Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook seem to have a better chemistry on the lobs, and even DeAndre Jordan's been getting into the mix lately.
Yeah, I'm with you. Just chemistry in this situation means know how high I can throw lobs, like know if I need to throw it, you know, put it timing on a spoon, or if it can be like we're throwing a football out back and just, you know, purposely throw me bad balls so I can make OBJ catches.
And I
like
think
that.
Sometimes that, like, that was one of the subplots of the 2019-20 season was like guys would throw lobs to JaVale or Dwight that, you know, AD would have gotten, but they were like, oh yeah, that's right, that's not AD rolling down the rim, rolling down to that. Like, that's almost like, I feel like a muscle memory thing where you get used to having like this huge, gigantic, ridiculous catch radius, and then it's like, oh yeah, like I kind of have to basically put it in the basket for Dwight at this point in his career.
Yep, but I mean, the team's throwing more lobs, and I love it. I don't know what the numbers look like. I don't know if big picture it's worth the turnovers we've seen so far. Yeah. At least so far. In the future, as they continue to fine-tune stuff, I'm sure it'll get better. But that, and then also the throwing really long passes after, like, free throws or inbounds, that has resulted in a lot of turnovers, but also gets the Lakers some easy buckets. Those are the two things that, at some point, I would love to do some video work and see, like, what, you know, what's the success rate on this. Because there could be a point where it's just not worth it. But, you know, it's a lot of fun highlight plays, and I'm still enjoying
seeing it. Yeah, this is going to be a high turnover team. I don't know if either of you feel differently, but I feel like that's just part of it with a team that's trying to play this fast. So, like, you have more possessions, so that's going to raise your turnovers per game numbers that kind of everybody looks at. That's going to raise that up. And they're trying audacious things to get easy baskets and stay out of the half court. That's going to lead to turnovers at times. And I think sometimes, especially on those long passes, that's not as damaging as, like, a turnover in the half court, just because your defense is basically already back. So at least it's not like quite the same. And I don't think that it will be as bad as, like, the numbers kind of look necessarily.
Sweet, man.
And some of these are sailing out of bounds. So it's like also like the team's not getting a fast break out of that either, which I'm not saying, like, you know, being an inaccurate passer enough that the player can't catch it is a good thing, but there are silver linings.
Harrison, really quick before you go, what have you heard lately about some of these injured guys and any updates on their status or anything coming out lately that's indicates maybe some close returns for any of them?
Yeah, I mean, I would be shocked if Ellington is not back in the lineup soon. Like, he's dressed the last two games, but Vogel just keeps saying, like, he's an emergency guy, which I guess just means, like, if every other guard gets injured, like, we will put him in, but otherwise we're going to try and steal him another game of rest. So he will be back, I think, any day now. I would be shocked if he wasn't. Like, I know I saw Woj just said on, like, ESPN, like, an hour or so ago that there's a lot of optimism that LeBron's going to play tomorrow. So mm-hmm. I would imagine that he will be back. You know, like, I don't think that stuff doesn't come out about LeBron's return status unless he's getting pretty close. So I would be, honestly, at this point, I would be surprised if he doesn't play tomorrow. So I think as far as the other guys, you know, it's going to be a while on THT. None, the kind of tenor of the talks about none makes me think that it's going to be like a little longer, like that he went from, like, I think it was okay. an ankle to he went to bone bruise, and Frank yeah. Vogel's calling it a big loss and like that kind of stuff. That makes me think that one's going to be a little longer mm-hmm. and I'm not sure when they're going to be getting none back. But I think, you know, LeBron being back, Ellington at least being another option for the team, yeah. even though he wasn't great during the preseason, like they're starting to get bodies back. And, you know, it seemed like that AD knee thing was, you know, not a whole, that was just a knee to knee contact that felt really bad, but ended up not being too detrimental. So hopefully he's all right. And yeah, I mean, there are going to be injuries and stuff this year, but I think they're getting closer to healthier, at which point we can really start to judge this team and kind of how they're approaching things and what things look like as we get a larger sample size and guys get healthy. But like Ariza and THT are going to be out for, you know, like months. Like that's, you know, they had surgery, like that's just a thing. But, you know, maybe THT working on his left hand during this time, at least he can do cardio. He's not going to be in NBA shape, but that may be, you know, it's obviously not a good thing that he got hurt, but it may, you know, he's going to learn how to use his left hand during this time maybe. And so, you know, that is something that, you know, maybe will be beneficial to him in the long run. Not that he couldn't have worked on his left hand before, but maybe he wasn't forced
to. Impossible.
You know, I remember
you can't Kobe, work on your offhand.
Yeah, I mean, Kobe, like, got way better with his left hand because he broke his hand at one point, like, early on in his career. Like, this stuff, you know, for all of us on the outside, we're like, why don't you just work on that? And they're like, well, but this other thing, I'm, like, really good at it, and I'm kicking ass with it, so why am I going to go to this? And, you know, we saw teams, like, kind of get the tape on THT, but, you know, maybe something like this in the long run ends up being a blessing for him if it forces him to really work on that left to the point where, obviously, he's still going to go right most of the time. That's how he's, like, made his bones, but he can at least, you know, teams cannot, to the comical degree they were last year, play him only for the right.
Mm-hmm. I remember, I actually went through this when I was in high school playing. We were in the state tournament making a run and broke my left wrist. And just every day at practice, everybody's practicing. Then I'm over there dribbling with my right hand, shooting right-handed layups, just bullshitting right-handed jump shots. And like you get better. And I mean, I graduated at that point, so it wasn't all that functional for me. But in college, first couple of years in rec ball, I was kicking ass.
Yeah, I gotta say, like working on my left when I broke my wrist in high school did not help my game very much. It did not help my left. Like I didn't get much better, you know, like, so maybe there's a THT's better at basketball than me though. So hopefully he like gets some.
When you're forced to be there and like just get some reps up.
I could actually shoot with my left hand by the end of it. It just was not good. Like okay, so I couldn't make with my left hand, but I could get the ball to the rim.
This all brings me around to one of my hottest basketball takes. This is like I'm putting my tinfoil cap on and looking into the future where I think legitimately we could see somebody like and I equate this to someone like a Shohei Ohtani who's doing such an unprecedented stuff where we'll see somebody shoot from either hand depending on what's most beneficial to the direction or body movement that they're going.
I think theoretically that's possible. Like that because, you know, there's switch hitters in baseball. It's not the same thing. Like people could train themselves to do that. Yeah, that would be a real weapon for someone.
I've seen it in college during practices or between drills. I'd be like dicking around with the assistant coaches and the head coach would never. They were too serious. But the assistant coaches and I, we'd like play horse, but with our offhands. And they were so good, dude. Like, and they had all played in the league, so it was like it's possible. They're you know, I don't know if it's quite like I will pull this out in a real game sort of shape, but I would imagine if you took this Lakers squad, stuck them in an open gym, and told them they can only shoot with their offhands, you'd see some really impressive stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. We already know what LeBron can do, like dribbling with his left, obviously, finishing through contact. He's done that both sides of the rim all his career. But this is my like big brain. I always wondered about it since I was a kid. Like, why don't, you know, like Harrison said, switch hitters, why don't guys shoot with both hands? Well, you know why? Because it's hard to become a shooter, good shooter with one hand. That's why.
And yeah. And it doesn't give you a natural advantage, really. Like, there are going to be very few situations where it's like, I wish I were righty instead of lefty.
I disagree. I think it's really? I think there's marginal advantages to be had there, where if you're coming off of a pick and roll and you want to shoot this little pull up that's just clearly easier if you're going to one direction or the other, or if someone's playing you, it makes it impossible to shade on all situations, jump shots included, not just like a drive, you know?
Yeah, I look forward to whatever Jigsaw-esque drill Lethal Shooter comes up with to get like his players to do this. Like,
they're going to be skydiving and shooting a rim as it, shooting at a rim as it falls.
Honestly, I respect like his social media. Like, he knows that people are making fun of him, but like, it's hilarious. Like, busting out the underwater jump shot, like, that was just like, that was an all-time
troll.
It's
got to be trolling.
Like,
yeah,
he's like, I'm wet it's even underwater. Like, that was so good. You can't even get mad at that. Like, people are mad. Like, he's like training THT to shoot like this. That's not the drills that he has them running. He's just showing off and marketing himself and whatever. And like, I think it's hilarious.
Right.
Like,
it was like in the Discord, I think yesterday, somebody posted one of the like Colin Cowherd takes about the Lakers, and you pointed out like, hey, Lee, no, this guy is getting paid to like have these crazy takes because he gets attention. Yeah, it has our attention. He's making money from it. Like, it's just part of the game.
Yeah, that's part of marketing. I mean, so, like you know, some people have bad takes because like they earnestly feel that way, or like they didn't, you know, like they aren't as informed on something and they're just trying to fire from the hip or whatever. Like, that stuff happens. But look, like, I don't have to name names to like say that there are people in media who know that if they like stand on a certain corner about like something and they yell about it, that there's going to be a certain amount of people that like engage with them, like Skip Bayless, you know, like he can like everything that LeBron does is the devil, you know, like there's no way Skip Bayless doesn't actually like, he's not actually mad that like LeBron like shit talked the Squid Game director or something, but like, you know, he could get 10 minutes of TV out of it and people are going to pay attention. So yeah, I mean, that kind of like this kind of stuff happens. Like, people are not always coming at this stuff from good faith, whether that leads to like, whether that, you know, expresses itself in hot takes, or it's like, I'm going to claim that this game is rigged because that will get, you know, like Nuggets fans to follow me or something like that. Like, that's just, you know, these kind of things happen where people like kind of lean into these bits because it's advantageous for them.
Yep. And when you have to talk that much, like, you're going to have to, you know, formulate some opinions that maybe you don't actually truly hold, just to have some sort of discussion.
We got to the Skip Bayless portion of the podcast. I think it's time to wrap it up.
Coming up Harrison next on Undisputed.
Who is, I don't even know what this means, Harrison Fagan. Thank you for joining us, editor-in-chief. Last question, how was that whole experience?
Which experience?
The what is, I don't even know what that means, Harrison Fagan. Some guy, the Philly
guy.
Oh,
the Mike Missinelli thing? That was, oh, okay, yeah. No, that was, honestly, that was the highlight of my offseason. That was so funny. Like, a couple years ago, I would have been, like, I would have been, like, because, like, I, you know, I get anxious. Like, I would have had, like, you know, full-on panic attack. I'm like, oh, man, everybody's after me. Like, this, like, guy with this huge platform just made fun of me. Now, it's like, that was hilarious that he got that mad over, like, not understanding a meme. It was, that was the funny. It gave us like a great podcast intro for me and Anthony's like Lakers Lounge podcast, where we just have him going like, Harrison Fagan, I don't even know what it. Yeah, like, he was just the fact that he took like my joke about my very clear like meme joke about like the Ben Simmons situation that like everyone was doing on Twitter. I don't even know how like Grandpa saw that one, but like specifically to get mad about. And
Facebook,
then the funniest
made
part
it to
of
Facebook.
It. Was like Jason Dumas, who like is like an NBA like writer, reporter, whatever, apparently was this guy's former intern. And this guy was like claiming that he did not know who he was, where is he getting sources and the Sixers like thing from. And he's going on this rant about like ethics and journalism while he works for a team broadcast partner. And like, you know, like he's essentially on the Sixers payroll, but he's like mad that people are like sending joke tweets about Ben Simmons. And that's evidence that I'm trying to get scoops from Clutch. Cause as you guys know, you know, just huge insider Harrison Fagan. I bring all
right
the Clutch
pocket.
Stories over here. Like if LeBron's gonna play, I have it first every single time. And it's just, you know, Rich Paul, he just like, he actually bases, people don't know this, but he bases who he leaks to on who sends the best Twitter memes. So, you know, it's like clearly with that, the like crux of that guy's hypothesis.
And even if you did, like, there may be times where you, someone, they're given information early that if released would be detrimental to the Lakers' success. And if we have any sort of vested interest, like, I'm not going to share that. Like, it's not helping us.
Oh, disagree.
It's not helping the team.
If I get a big story, like, I'm going to report it. Like, even if, you know, like, it's something harmful to the Lakers, like, I'm not going to sit on it or whatever. I know you guys are still, like, more diehard fans or whatever. I'm more reporter, even though I think I do have, like, I still have a soft spot for this team, and especially for the fans and who have made my career possible and everything. But, like, if there's a negative story, like, I'm still going to cover it. But that's also, like, that's not my main thing. Like, I'm not like a scoops guy. Mm-hmm. I'm more of kind of like, I'm a blogger. Like, I embrace my role as like being a little bit more on the outside and kind of analyzing this stuff in ways that people are like, you know, who have to maintain relationships like with all of these people on a regular basis, like maybe can't, you know. I ask questions, like I talk to people obviously, but like my job is not reliant upon, you know, like if, you know, team employee X is mad at me and they're not going to leak to me, like all of a sudden, like, oh, my job is in trouble. Like, I can kind of, you know, say what I want in like a different way, or like make jokes on Twitter in a way that I could not if I was trying to be, you know, like Woj or Shams or whatever. Right. It's just like a different type of media job entirely. Like, yeah, just the fact that he like thought that was evidence of like ethics and journalism issue was the funniest part to me.
Oh, man, that was too funny to watch. You get your, you know, 5 minutes of
I still had like his like radio fans tweeting at me that I was like a clutch plant like 2 days later, man. Which was very funny.
That's great. Well, thank you, Harrison, for joining us. You got anything other stuff coming out this week people should be on the lookout for?
No, I mean, Rich Paul will let me know my schedule, you know, tomorrow or whatever for the rest of the week. And, you know, it just which memes I have to send about the Simmons situation. No, I mean, we have some good stuff coming up at Silver Screen and Roll. We have like Jacob's writing a story right now that I'm in the middle of editing on, you know, like why it's not really, it's sort of some similar stuff that we talked about on this pod, but like why it's not time to panic about the Lakers yet. And there's like a lot of context here that I think is going missing in like, you know, everyone being mad on Twitter after a game or something like that you can extend upon an article. You know, Darius has something coming on kind of the Lakers six men and them having more scoring punch off the bench. And, you know, we have some good stuff. I've actually been, you know, really happy with the staff that we've put together. We have like kind of deeper, more thoughtful columns coming basically every weekday now, which is something that was really important to me as I look to kind of overhaul the staff going into this season. And, you know, we were able to bring some contractors back and, you know, on staff and on payroll. So, you know, I'm excited about that. Dr. Brar had a great thing on today on why, you know, there's reason for optimism that this LeBron ankle thing is not as bad as, you know, maybe people were making it out to be because it's the same ankle and stuff like that. That was really insightful. And then now, you know, maybe not as necessary to look at if they're just about to announce that he's going to play tomorrow or something like that. But still, I mean, he was ahead of the curve. And, you know, I'm proud that we have stuff like that on the site. And I'm really proud of our staff.
Awesome.
Yeah, your go-to resource for fans. And I do really appreciate like the depth of the pieces, and then just the fact that you've got, it's not just like, here's what they said, here's what's happening, you know, game recap, here's what went on. There are those like, we're going to deep dive this player, this situation, or like the medical stuff, like you mentioned, like it's very timely. And it's, you know, these are questions we all have, and none of us have this background to be able to answer the questions. So having that kind of personnel dedicated to the team that we follow is fantastic. And we really appreciate the work that you and your team
do. Appreciate that. Just last thing for me, I just want to say, like, I just always want to give people that click on one of our stories, like, a reason to feel like they went to our site versus, you know, like going to, you know, like a general NBA site or some other competitor or something like that. Like, I want people to feel rewarded that they like went to this homepage and feel like they want to come back, 'cause they're like, I got some good information from this.
Well, you are the Lakers blog referenced most in the Lakers Exceptionalism podcast. So thank you for that.
That may or may not be because some of my staff members are in there, but I'll take it.
Well, thank you again for joining us, man. Go check out all Harrison's work and everyone at the very talented team at Silver Screen and Roll. And Tim, we'll record another one here soon. Hopefully we get LeBron back and see what this offense could look like, because it hasn't been great lately.
Yeah, and if the offense needs new ideas, I just today commissioned three songs to be created that we are going to, you know, LeBron came to LA to make movies. Well, we're going to have a nice musical here on the Lakers Exceptions podcast.
Tim went to Fiverr to get
schematic concepts.
You told me this before the pod. I didn't realize that you were like going to announce it on the show today, that you had these like songs in commission and you're just ready for the team to play better offense to like knock them out. This is great.
I'm so scared.
It's going to be great. Well, if they come out before the team starts playing better offense, we can take some credit and be like, you know what? It was the frozen rewrite that those Lakers sex pod guys put together that, you know,
I'm like, look, so be on the lookout for that, I guess. I don't know. We'll try and drop it here at the end of the pod sometime. But until then, we'll talk to y'all next time.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.